Metal Calf.
Hey, behave.
Going live on this Memorial Day Monday, everybody. You know, John, this is where we cut our teeth on the holidays. This is how the show was originally born. Nights and holidays. So here we are on a Memorial Day.
Just keep on swinging, baby. Keep swinging the pick, Haberman.
Hopefully, maybe you're like Middlecoff. You're recovering from last night, getting ready for, you know, a day in the sun today. And so you're going to hang out with us a little bit if you're watching on the stream on YouTube Live. If you're listening to the podcast, we hope you had a relaxing weekend and day and whatever it is that you did. We're glad you're back here with us.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day. Happy to America and happy just mad props to all of our veterans out there. I know my father, I have a picture over there with the, you probably weren't living in Davis yet, but they had the traveling Vietnam, the wall.
Oh, wow.
It was like, obviously they had the one and it came to Davis. You know where, if you're familiar with Davis, it's where, what's the thing called when they put out a bunch of little shops, you know, on like a Saturday morning.
Like a farmer's market?
Yeah, the farmer's market in Davis. Downtown. Do you know where that was? Do you remember downtown. Where that was? That little stretch of that green grass right there downtown? That's where they brought it. And I was like, I have the picture over there, pointed out the name. I didn't, obviously, I mean, I was young. This is probably like...
He was pointing at his brother's name?
I was. Oh. My dad took the picture, you know. Yeah. I kind of had a frown on my face. It wasn't a great look for me, but well, I was like really, five or six.
I mean, it's kind of an awkward...
Yeah, I didn't quite know what was going on, but it was clearly a big deal for him to go to see the wall.
Yeah, we went, remember? Didn't we go before we went to a Nationals-Giants game? Didn't we go to the wall in D.C.?
I've
been a couple of times, so I can't remember if we went on that trip, but that's a pretty, that's a quiet place. That is a quiet place. I guess you don't really say happy Memorial Day, right? You say thank you.
Yeah, you say thank you.
For
And
a hat tip. Yep. And a hat tip. I was looking this morning at, I put it on Instagram, Ted Williams, baseball reference page. You know, just 3 years, gone, no stats, military service. Now, Ted did not serve in World War II. He was, those 3 years he spent training to
was
be
he in
a
the Korean
pilot.
War?
He was in the Korean, yeah, he flew in the Korean War.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously, but just to me, like when you look at that baseball reference, like that snapshot in time, Ted Williams, 3 years, just being a fighter pilot, came back in whatever year he came back, maybe 46, won the MVP.
Yeah, no big deal.
Like we're like, oh, Buster Posey's playing well, 1 year off.
Yeah, it's Ted, like, you know, they call it the toughest generation of all time. I mean, if you were involved
the greatest,
in WWE,
yeah.
And you I call it toughest, greatest. You can combine those two.
I wonder if he, if like the fighter pilot stuff actually helped. You know, like now guys would be like throwing tennis balls at each other, catching them with eyes closed, pointing out dots. You know, the way like
I don't think in the modern day time he would have been a fighter pilot because he was too tall. Like, I mean, what I've always read about like the modern day fighter pilots with the planes, like in the '80s, like Top Gun type stuff, is the average height because isn't Ted Williams like 6'4"? Wasn't he really tall?
Well, I mean, he was tall. Yeah, he's listed at 6'3".
Yeah, for that generation.
He might have been tall.
Okay.
I bet his eyesight, I'm not making a joke, I bet his eyesight was incredible.
Yeah, but I thought the thing was, it's just hard to, you know, someone listening probably knows better than me. It was just hard to fit.
Yeah.
It's just, they're made for a guy like, I think, 5'9 to 6 feet range. That's why Tom Cruise, make fun of him all you want. Like, he was actually size for most Navy SEALs, you know, maybe Jocko's an outlier. I think... Because the guy my brother's works for went on this hunting trip to Idaho, and he said we got there. He had this buddy, he's a really rich guy. They flew out there, and SEAL Team 6 was there. Like they gave him a vacation, they took him there. You know, this place invites them. And I was like, what were the size of most of them? He's like, honestly, if you didn't know they were SEAL Team 6, I mean, they're in well shaped guys, but they're not very. And this guy's 6'3", John. He's like, they're not very big, you know, because you want to be fucking agile, right?
Right.
Like ninjas, but you know, with guns.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
So,
it wouldn't have been hard in the 40s, maybe, to find a 6'3 guy look like an outlier.
What do you think they think of my golf wound on my head? You know,
oh yeah,
that for toughness.
That is, I mean, from what I heard, you never went down. You never called the trainer over. You did not force TV to take a commercial break. You hit your head on the golf cart, and I guess that cut through that. Did the hat kind of protect you?
Yeah, it's not really a cut. I think it's just a deep bruise. You know, it's kind of scabbing. I would imagine the top of my head is, you know, pretty thin skin. And yeah, I mean, for a split second, a little intoxicated, I'm like, did I just get a concussion? I kind of shook it off. I mean, it rattled me. I hit it pretty
How'd you
solid.
Play after that?
Not well.
Golf injury is high on the list probably of embarrassing injuries I guess you could suffer in athletics.
Yeah, this is, you know, one takeaway I would have for TPT Scottsdale, where the waste management is, which every single human I've ever met that have attended said it is an incredible event. When you take away all the grandstands and the stadium elements of all the holes, it doesn't look the same. It's cool, but given the price point, now it might have been racked up a little bit because of the holiday weekend. You know, again, solid course. It's cool to say you played there, I guess, but like TPC Harding and TPC Scottsdale, I would say just as a pure course, and obviously they have a fucking major at Harding Park. It's just a much better track. Like, you just feel like
which
that
one's
was
a better track?
Golf.
Harding Park.
Harding. It's yeah. It feels bigger. You know, just more dynamic. Because the most famous hole, 16, you're used to playing in like Brian Denny Stadium or something, right? You're like,
yeah.
But when you go there, and especially when you don't play the tips. It's 145 yard shots. So you're hitting a pitching wedge. And you're like, is this? I thought this. What?
They should have speakers blaring crowd noise or something to just kind of get you off your game a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the coolest hole is the falling hole 17. It's like the drivable par 4 with some water on the left. I think Xander this year, Kyle Jensen, who I played with, who's buddies with our buddy Hawk because they played together at St. Mary's, was like. I had $100 on Xander to win, and he pumped it in the water. I remember that's when Koepka won, and he was like tied for the lead going into 17. So yeah, I mean Arizona's a great place, but that golf course was, you know, I'd put on the overrated scale. Now it's relative, like it's not like a
you didn't
track.
Get it on its best either, right? Like
yeah,
what people are reacting to normally is the. It's kind of the other stuff. It's more of a restaurant where it's like the food's not great, but it's just the energy. It's like old red booths,
yeah.
The location.
And I'm not even trying to complain. I check in our bags. They're like, Middlecoff. And I'm like, damn. And he's like, hey, I'm Orlando. I went to Sarah High School. And then he just casually drops, played in the Mariners system for a while, stayed out here. Love your guys' stuff. He's obviously a Niner guy.
Shout out to Orlando then. Promo code HAM.
The Bay Area is sneaky. And maybe it's like this, definitely probably on West Coast cities, I would imagine, Southern California, Arizona area, Nevada, I would imagine Portland, Seattle. You're just going to meet some transplants, you know, that have moved different places. They do stay loyal to their squads. It just shows you, like, sports are a big deal around here, and people follow it very, and it's like that all over the country, but, like, I do think that, like, the Giants and the Niners, they get followed very, very closely once you leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Niners are a unique brand.
John,
the guy, I was drinking yesterday at a Tempe bar, and the guy was like, this is a Niners bar. It's the main bar in Arizona, or for the ASU, it's a 49ers bar. He said in 19, when the Super Bowl year, said it was a fucking zoo.
I wonder what the average age of the Niners fan in Tempe is, you know?
Maybe come some perfect, you know, it could just be a mixture of different things, mm-hmm. right?
Some but you probably get a lot of, I would imagine if we could get the demographics on Arizona student body, where they come from. I mean, obviously California is going to be a huge part of their student body, right?
Is it crazy to think California is probably their number one outside Arizona state?
No, probably not. Yeah. I mean, they got 85,000 students. Something like that.
I mean, I can name 10 people off my head that I know went to school there.
I'm on a text thread with 3 other people. Places. All 3 of them went to ASU. One of my, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah, it's pretty common.
Hunter Bishop, ASU guy, right?
Hunter Bishop, who texted me yesterday. He was watching the Hunter Bishop interview. Yesterday. Monday, May 30th. I'm like, are you just watching this now? He's like, legends. By the way, John, before we get to some football stuff, Bradley on the YouTube says, which course at Wecopa was better? Wecopa, is that how you
Wecopa,
say it?
Wecopa.
Wecopa.
You know, Riggs, who I think moved to Arizona, just plays golf nonstop. He has, like, he's done a video that it was his favorite course. and it's pretty cool.
But it's multiple.
The second one.
There's multiple courses.
There's 36 holes. Segura, I think, is the course that's the better one. Cholo or Chola is their other course. It's a little more targety. This one, the other one's more of a true course.
Okay.
You know, no big deal. Your boy was 37 on the front, and then, you know. I've never started 18 holes drunk, because usually if you start drinking while you're playing. But when you play 36 holes, you know, you just, by the time you get to the first nine, you're like, oh, I'll order some rounds, you know. And then you realize, like, we got a lot of golf left.
It's a long day. It's 112 degrees, and you're just...
If you can drink a lot of water, I do believe this, though. It's much easier to play golf in the hot, in like just the heat than it ever is the cold, just because you're so loose.
It's like
baseball. Like Tiger said, it's a warm weather sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember Tiger at Pebble? Remember when we went to Pebble, one of the things Tiger said a couple years ago when Gary Woodland won, one of the things, it was cold. And Tiger... Basically, it was like, yeah, Tiger in this type of weather, just he can't get loose enough. It's just never going to be. Charles on the YouTube says, Ted Williams Army Air Corps doctor's test had him with 20/10 eyesight, which 20/10 means you see at 20 feet what people see at 10 feet. Like your vision is what? That's incredible.
What are you?
I'm bad. I wear contacts. I don't really quite know what it means, but I'm like -3.5 in one eye and -3.75 in the five in the other eye. It's pretty bad. Like I couldn't, you know, at like right now I'm two and a half feet back from my computer monitor. I couldn't take my glasses off or contacts out and read that. I remember I did a baseball game with.
I feel like at this point in time I'm a 7'7" guy.
7'7"?
Does that feel bad? Like 7 feet? 7 feet?
Well, you don't wear corrective lenses or anything, right?
Yeah, but I think I'm adapting. It's headed that way.
Yeah, you squint. Yeah, my vision's pretty bad. But a couple years ago, I did a baseball game with JT Snow, and I remember he saw something like beyond the outfield wall at sundown that I could not see. And I'm like, dude, JT now is 50 plus. I'm like, dude, he doesn't have corrective lenses. And I was like, what's your eyesight? And I think his eyesight was like 20/10 also. It was something crazy. That's just elite human eyesight. I do think if we went and got, most guys are not Eric Sogard wearing corrective lenses.
I never made it past Little League, but going up against a couple guys that ended up pitching for our high school that, you know, was a powerhouse in the area, won the section. I remember thinking like, this is really, I can't see shit. It just ball gets there so fast. I can't imagine. The faster it gets, and guys, even in high school, if a guy's throwing 85, like how fast that looks.
Shout out to Davis High baseball coach Ethan Gavon. Good luck.
Yeah, no big deal.
All right, should we dive into some stuff today?
Feels like we got a pretty good, Rolodex of some young high school coaches that are on the move. That
Eric Brown, Clovis West.
Yeah,
is that you're
talking
about?
Two historic programs, Clovis West football, Davis High School baseball.
Glory.
Yeah.
Hey, remember, Mokoff will come to a... Come do the wave.
I'll get the Davis Enterprise and Fresno B articles forwarded from family members.
I was talking to a guy who did some radio in Fresno over the weekend. I'm like, maybe it was Friday afternoon. And I was like, man, you got to do some more coverage of Clovis West High School football. You got to go all in on the Golden Eagles.
They still do the high school show?
They do a high school show, but from what I've heard, my thing to him was like, you got to rededicate to the local market. You know,
I think in 2019.
Feel that
I
niche.
Remember driving home from my mom's house and turning on 1140. They had a fantastic post high school show just going around the area. Like Folsom leads 43-7.
This is Sacramento area.
Go to a guy there and then a dude at Elk Grove and then Davis High and Grand High. I was like, this is impressive.
I love a good local high school show with like a call in. Like, I'm down here at Temecula, actually, Kingsburg. Right now it's 42-41. Tyler Bray just threw three touchdowns. And you hear like cheering in the background. And like you can barely, the key is you have to barely be able to hear the person who's doing the high school football update. Anyway.
Yeah. Oakland Tech against Folsom. Breakout game for sophomore Bill Johnson.
Those are the best, man. I used to do high school football like around like that show basically, and we would use the ESPN college football music, you know, with the drums, and we just tried to make it feel huge. And you'd have like, we go now live to, you know, Delano were the 5A titles on the line. Whatever we called it, I don't even remember.
Well, it's one thing when a guy like Oklahoma or Alabama or USC has a breakout game because you can Google him. You're like, wow, this kid was big time. When you hear that like in your car, like a sophomore or junior, that might be the greatest moment of the guy's life ever moving forward to.
Absolutely.
He'd be telling that story for a long time.
I remember we'd be
three TDs against Visalia. Broke two tackles on the fourth one.
The key was, it's like TPC Scottsdale, like in the Central Valley, and you know, wherever you guys are, whoever you are, wherever you're listening, in California, Central Valley high school football is huge. Crowds are big. You know,
yeah.
I love a town where there's like, where people are mad that their college football team plays on Friday night because it hurts the high school attendance. That's always a big battle, you know?
Yeah, I'd say it's, you know, from everything, I've never been to a high school game there, but just reading about it and watching it from afar, I mean, they've done enough television shows and movies. It feels like, and I'm saying this is a compliment, like a poor man's version of Texas, but it has a feel like it's in...
Where are you talking about?
It's closer to that. I'm the Fresno area.
You never went to a high school game in Fresno?
No, I'm talking about Texas.
Oh,
I'm saying Fresno has type vibe. Obviously not quite as crazy, you know, the poor man's version.
Yeah.
But I'm using that as a compliment.
I remember I did a... arena football game at a high school in Katy, Texas. And it was an incredible stadium. Incredible.
Did you guys
stadium.
Feel it? It was indoors.
Nobody was.
Can you play arena football outdoors?
No, it doesn't work.
Did they draw the lines to make it a smaller stadium?
I don't
How'd
really
do
remember
that?
Other than we were there. Yeah, they. Maybe we drove by. Maybe that's what we were in Katy and we drove by the high school football stadium. We must not have played there now that I think about it.
Because Biletnikoff's son wanted to see it, probably.
Freddie B. Jr. was the coach of that team.
Yeah. Well, if you were a coach, it'd be like if you're a golfer and you're like driving in Georgia, you're like, could we just swing by Augusta just to see the gates? You know, I bet Freddie B.'s like, I just want to see this high school stadium.
I think the bus just drove by. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. All right, let's dive into some stuff here, people. You ready to go?
Yeah, let's roll.
We didn't really talk about how we're going to do these videos. You want a 3-2-1 it? Or we just dive in, cut them that way?
We can 3-2-1 it.
We don't have any wine act. No. Let's just do it. We have anything we're pushing beforehand?
I got geology.
Some geology. All right, here we go. Well, 3-2-1 it then. This is part of the what you watch here, and Daniel says Ohio high school football sneaky nuts. I believe that YouTube comment.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, by the way, iTunes mailbag. Leave us a review on iTunes. In that review, 5 stars. Leave us a question. We will get to that on the mailbag at the end of the week. We appreciate that.
YouTube channel. We're obviously live doing this. We do every show. We post a bunch of videos. And yeah, go check that out as well. Haberman Middlecoff.
Mac Jones is smaller than Jared Stidham. Tom Curran wrote this. And somebody actually DM'd me on maybe Friday. And they were like, did you just hear Curran on Cowherd? He was saying that Mac Jones looks really small. I remember you and I were talking about this a while ago. You pointed out, I think, first a while back. Was like, I don't know if people realize that Mac Jones is not 6'4", 6'5". Tom Curran tweeted, just finished watching our first OTA 2021. One thing that stands out to me about Mac Jones is his size or lack thereof. Not just compared to Cam Newton. Shorter than Stidham as well. Really will need to fill out his frame as well. So he's saying, not only is he not tall, he's actually not particularly solidly built. Remember one thing that we've talked about with, turns out Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy's not fat. Jimmy got thicker. Jimmy put on weight, put on muscle. And, you know, watching Trey Lance, some of the clips we've seen of Trey looks impressive. I would say, here's one question I have, Middlecoff. If you put a number 50 on a guy, does that make him look smaller?
Yeah, but the knock on him was physical stature was not impressive. Relative to the other two guys that he was in the group. He was in a pod, right? We've used the word a lot over like the last year of like working pods. Like there was a pod of three guys once we knew the first and second pick. And two of them were physical freaks. I mean, Justin Fields is a blue chip, 5-star elite physical freak. Trey Lance is one of those come out of nowhere, like, damn, a little Carson Wentz-y. Like this guy's playing where? And then there was Mac Jones, who was the most accomplished, who won the biggest, who they don't play each other, but was unreal. Like him and Fields' team played each other and he dominated. But there were two knocks on him. One is, and I think that Bill probably saw some of this, not the height, but his body, I would say, has a little Brady Michigan vibe. Just flabby. Well,
it does feel like that's
just kind
where
of white
the comp
guy.
Comes from.
Yeah. And
part of it.
That will change. Moses Cabrera, the strength coach, at New England.
Is there a Bulldog in the
house?
Was
at Fresno State when we were there. Yeah, no big deal. And he's been there now a decade. That guy's body. I heard Lombardi say this on one of his pods, like a month, whenever the draft pick. He's like, listen, I've been around Belichick to know long enough. Like, Mac Jones physically, not height-wise, but just definition, flabbiness, that's going to go away over a year span. But it takes some, you don't just, as anyone, try to lose some pounds. You know, it takes a little time. But I think the crazy part is like, listen, Cam is a physical outlier. Cam might look big if Tom was still there, right? Cam's huge. And Cam Curran, who's kind of an old school Big J, who's one of the rare ones that's still moving forward that I have a lot of respect for. He's not trying. I don't think he was trying to like get a lot of retweets. He's just saying it's pretty glaring. Jared Stidham, not that tall of a guy either, and he just looks a lot bigger. Now, he's been in the league for a while. You and I were talking, like, leading up to the draft, that the thing that was going to be hard for Kyle to overcome was until he played a game and went after the draft and in OTAs and training camp, you're still a long way away from a game. It's probably not going to be kind to Mac Jones. And the other thing is the Niners, like, they have established blue-chip players on their team, right? Kittle. And Kittle's not, you know, he's not Gronk. Like, he's not the tallest. You and I have been around him. Like, he's 6'3", but like 6'2 and three quarter. Like, he's not 6'5", but he's a blue-chip player in the NFL. Trent Williams is truly a blue-chip at all. Athletic ability, size. I think Fred Warner's become one. Like, they just got guys that when they walk out of that little stretch at practice or in a game, they just look the part in the NFL. It would have been hard for him to overcome just... I just wonder if some of his teammates were like, this is the guy?
Well,
right?
Also, right, the Patriots, one of the issues with the 49ers is that their quarterback, who's also not huge, has gotten hurt a couple of times. Now, Jimmy, it doesn't feel like he's gotten hurt because he's not, you know, it's not been an issue that he's not 6'5", and that's why he's getting hurt, right? But he has been hurt a couple of times. And I think that's a different, that's kind of a different spot to be in, because when we think about quarterback height, what we're talking about is, one of the things we're talking about is can you handle the physicality of the game? Now, as it turns out, Russell's, you know, any issue that Russell has with height, it's not the physicality of the game. Even Kyler, we'll see with Kyler as time goes on. Baker, we'll see as time goes on. I think the other question is just your offensive linemen are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". Can you see over them? Can you make plays? There's multiple reasons quarterback height comes in, but it's not just height.
Kyler got tossed this year on that Thursday night game. And he wasn't quite the same the rest of the season.
Yeah, he was not healthy the whole year. But this is where it's twofold on Mac. It's not just the height, right? It's the physicality. So if you had another guy out there that looked like Garoppolo, the other issue would be, does this guy, and this is one thing that Curran tweeted that I didn't have the tweet here, was he looked really good, accuracy on air. His arm wasn't particularly live. Again, so you walk this guy out there next to Garoppolo, he's not much bigger than Jimmy, or he's not bigger than Jimmy. He's not thicker than Jimmy. And then on top of that, his arm's not better? You'd go, what?
Right? Well, his arm's not better than Jimmy, for sure.
Well, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it would really have looked, again, we're relitigating something that didn't happen, but this is where, at least with the Patriots, there was an extra spotlight on Mac Jones because he's a first-round pick and not a second- or a third-round pick. But... you know, he's in a different bubble than he would have been in San Francisco, even though the light's plenty bright in New England. You know, he didn't get picked over anybody else there.
I think if Kyle was defending Mac Jones, and I bet he does still, he would say, well, Mac Jones played with five offensive linemen. The Raiders took one in the first round. The Eagles took one early in the second round. The only reason, because he was injured, he would have been a first round pick. They have other guys that will surely be first and second round picks, right, as their careers go. None of them are 6'2", right? He's playing with NFL enormous offensive linemen. But my pushback is like, yeah, it's just easier. Like, it's not even debatable. Even though it's hard what he's doing, it's harder to do what he did in the NFL. To me, the thing that I don't like the fit. Like, you could have justified the fit out here. Plays 8, depending on the year, 9 home games at Levi Stadium. Most, like, maybe you get a rainy December, but at worst, what are you playing? Like a 65-degree day? There are going to be several days that are 95.
65, and everyone in the stadium's like, oh my God, it's so hot.
Yeah, 65. It's like, oh, build a big umbrella for us. Arizona's inside, the Rams are inside. So, minimum, that's 10 good weather games. Seattle, depending on when you play them, which I think this year is early in the season there, is going to be pretty good weather. And then depending on your schedule, like, you may only have a couple. Like, you're getting, playing with the Patriots, 3 to 4 cold New England games. If you play the Jets or Bills after probably Thanksgiving, probably, like, it's, I don't love the fit.
You're saying,
like,
arm strength is a bigger, yeah, bigger issue than the
height. That's one thing. Like, when you think Brady, it's crazy, like, just going on the trip this weekend. Tom Brady just comes up in some form or fashion. Like, he'll just, he just becomes a conversation. Like, people just, he's just a talked about human, you know? And it can be a lot of different things. It was like, whether it's about the match, whether it's about his greatness, whether it's be about just whatever.
TB12.
He just kind of finds his, he just finds a way into a conversation.
Yeah.
The reason he's known as the greatest cold weather quarterback, because he had a fucking laser. And obviously he's really good, but he wasn't like, you know that, I don't know if Brady can get the ball there. It's like, no, he's just throwing BBs through the wind.
Yep. Yep.
And that's where I do wonder, did they love Mac Jones or was a little out of desperation?
Well,
I mean, they liked, but
did they not like anybody else in the first round? Right, that's the other question. Did they have like 13
yeah, they weren't
going to
trade
round
up.
Grades?
Weird spot.
Also, it could be as simple as it's they've done it before in later rounds. They did it with Jimmy. They did it with Jacoby. It's just a value, like, you know. Even if he's our backup for a year, maybe he can look good in some preseason games, and maybe we can trade him to somebody else for a first-round pick again, or, you know, who knows? They might not have loved anything else that was available to them.
Now, again, if I wanted to defend Mac Jones, if you would have, I'm not comparing him to, like, Drew Brees, but Drew Brees never looked good in practice, right? Trying to think. I mean, Dak Prescott, for that rookie year, now, he was a fourth-round pick, but I bet in practice he wasn't killing it. Like, remember, Kellen Moore, who now is his coach, shattered his wrist or something in a almost a spring training, in a training camp, or in a either training camp practice or a preseason game. Remember, Dak was like well below on the depth chart, and then all of a sudden, Romo's back breaks, his coach's arm breaks, and it's like, Dak Prescott, and then he has the great season. It's like, holy shit, and then Tony comes back like 3 months later, it's about the man in the mirror. He like tapped out. You remember that? And it was the right decision, but Tony never played another snap again in his life. Kind of crazy how that, you know, looking back, that was a pretty big moment. I remember watching the press conference.
What was the deal? Like, he didn't, did he not, like, not say Dak's name or something like that? Wasn't there something weird? Maybe he never said the word retirement, or it was something.
Yeah, I think he said, like, listen, this kid's pretty impressive. Like, I like him. You know, I remember him kind of getting his back, but also, remember some people ripped him, kind of an ego play.
Yeah. You know? That's the part I remember. I don't really remember the specifics of it. All right, John, before we move on, let's tell the... Oh, do you have something else on that?
No.
Let's tell the people about sleepnumber.com/ham. Sleepnumber.com/ham. Proven quality sleep. Right now, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed during the Memorial Day sale.
Here's the thing, guy. When you go on trips like to Arizona, you get an Airbnb and you get on a bed, which I don't blame the guy. If I ran his Airbnb operation, I'd probably go a little cheap too. You know, just generic. And you realize, I'm not sleeping that well. Bed's hard. Like, what is going on? Really tired. Get home. Woo! Sleep Number bed's there. And you sleep incredible night's sleep. Probably a better night's sleep last night than I did for 3 straight days in the crappy bed. It's a game changer. Because when you sleep well, you live well, you produce well, your job's going well, life's good. You are more productive when you sleep well. That's not debatable. Studies have shown. Guy and I can attest.
Yep. Helps you recover faster from exercise, from injuries, from illness, from a long weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Get your bounce back, reduces anxiety. I don't know about you. I've had to make an extra effort on this particular Monday to hydrate a little extra. Sleep Number, the folks at Sleep Number are big on helping yourself sleep well by doing other things like limit your evening caffeine intake and chug some high quality H2O. Discover proven quality sleep. Save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed during the Memorial Day sale, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/ham.
Oh, the places. Ground beef from Butcher Box can take you. Ground beef is absolutely the go-to item in my freezer. Why? Because at a moment's notice, you're making bolognese, you're making enchiladas, you're making chili, you're making meatloaf, you're making hamburger patties, and we are entering hamburger patty season. I've been telling you about ButcherBox for years. High quality cuts of meat, amazing value. Find high quality seafood as well that you can trust, delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping, always. Today, ButcherBox is giving you, the listener, free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Just use my link, butcherbox.com/ham, and use the code HAM to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/ham, code HAM. They say you're not supposed to give out multiple URLs in one ad, but for a great cause, you do it. Today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Did you know? One man every hour, every day, is diagnosed with testicular cancer. In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer among men aged 15 to 35. I did not know that. April is National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, and Manscaped is donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. You can visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And of course, use the code HAM for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. With this in mind, you can perform simple routine self-checks at home while enjoying the Manscaped products like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. If you don't like making a mess, it's great because this thing is waterproof. Shave in the shower, shave in the ocean, shave in the hotel. Code HAM at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app because it's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action. While you watch your favorite players in sports, you just pick more or less on two or more player stats, and then the fun is on. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. It's really simple to play. You make your picks, submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. I'll do it at halftime of a basketball game. And I also have some season-long more or less picks on MLB homers. You may remember, I've got less on Ohtani homers this year. We'll see. And at halftime of your next NBA blowout game, just jump on and go, Steph Curry more than 11 points in the second half. It'll change the game for you. Download the Prize Picks app and use the code HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
I got to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. I've spent years trying to upgrade my security system at the house with one of those big name companies that, I'll be honest, sucks. I got the Eufy Video Lock, and it's an automatic improvement. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y, Video Lock. It's easy to install, just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. And now I've got the keyless entry. I always go for walks. I don't want to take keys. I hate stuff in my pockets. I go without the keys. The fingerprint recognition lets me in less than 1 second. There's no monthly fees. You have your recordings locally. You never have to pay for storage. I love knowing that doorbell ring was just a delivery. I don't have to jump up and get it. Or if I'm out of town, I can look. I can see the landing in front of the door and tell the neighbor, hey, do you mind swinging by and picking up something? I love the 3-in-1 video smart lock from Eufy, and you will too. So search Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Football Morning in America, Peter King, he is what he writes. ESPN reported last week the Falcons have been offered a first-round pick for Julio Jones. I'm skeptical of that, but we'll see. If Atlanta had that offer, one GM with interest in Jones told me last week, they'd have made the deal already and just said, we'll announce it next week. Peter goes on to write, it could be that the Falcons may end up with a first-round pick in a future draft beyond 2022, but I believe they have not been offered that yet. I was told a while ago by a source I trust that the Falcons would accept a hard second-round pick in 2022, meaning no condition on Jones's playing time, with no responsibility to pay Julio any of the $38 million he has coming. That seems like the most logical outcome. My guess is a hard second rounder. I like that hard second rounder, meaning no, oh, if he plays 12 games, it's a third rounder that becomes a second rounder.
You know, without having all the details of the situation, maybe I'm wrong on this, but because remember, and it felt like if I'm just playing the puzzle game, and I know the Big J's hate this, like, don't source guess. Rap Sheet, I actually met him a couple times. I don't think he gives a shit, but he tweeted out within the last 2 weeks that Julio was the guy that kind of requested the trade a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Like, he had gone to them maybe during free agency, like, I want out. And maybe it's because he saw the writing on the wall that they were probably going to, you know, he might be the odd man out anyway once he realized they were probably going to take one of the sweet skill guys. When you follow the sport and you're around, we've been lucky, right? We've seen, like, really good teams. We've seen Dennis Allen and Tom Sula teams. We've seen leaky teams. We've seen just a team like a Del Rio team kind of get buttoned up and just get the train rolling. Like, I'd say in our, since we've been doing the show since about 2013, we've kind of seen it all. Super Bowl, you know, attendees, teams that draft number two. The way to do business in the NFL is, now, I'm not, you got to use the media sometimes. Like, you just get it out there. It's probably easier than placing 32 calls. Like, are guys available? You just throw it out there and let people come fishing. I get it. I don't feel like the Falcons are handling this very well. Now, they have a first-time general manager. They have a first-time head coach. But the way it's just like, it's just out there. And maybe it was unavoidable with this June 1 number. I bet the GM would say, well, Thomas Dimitroff has done a really shitty job the last couple of years creating all this space, not all on me. And I would say that's probably fair. But there is a way to just kind of keep your mouth shut. And that's where I'm, again, guessing a little bit. I think Julio did the thing, orchestrate with Shannon Sharpe, because he was tired of it. Like, stop fucking talking about it. Just trade me, right? Just get this over with. And I feel like they were handling this poorly. I just don't feel like a well-established general manager. Maybe any first-time GM might be a little overwhelmed with something like this, but if you just went like a Rick Spielman, a John Schneider, just good GMs around the league, Belichick, it just, something would happen. And this whole thing is dragging on. And when it drags on for a while, we've had like, you know, you can get him for a third, to now he might go for a one, to now teams want him to eat the money. It's just, how long, what is going on here? If I was Arthur Blank, I would just wonder, like, are these guys a little over their head on this? Is that fair?
Well, yeah, but let me throw another.
Theory. They inherited this. It's not all their fault.
And it's hard because they have to wait until June 2nd, basically, to do this deal. But let me throw.
But they could have postmarked it.
Let me ask, did you see the video that came out of the Panthers draft? The video the Panthers put out of their draft room when the Vikings called to try and trade up with them. Did you see this video? A couple days ago.
Because the Vikings were going to try to draft Justin Fields, right?
The Vikings try to draft Fields, and it's one of these deals where it's like, we might get to the point where NFL teams start telling other NFL teams, look, you can't like start putting our offers in your little draft videos that you guys like to put.
Well, it's like, you guys don't say shit and you're using us.
Yes.
Wouldn't you be mad if you
were
the Vikings?
I would be mad. And I think I watched that video and thought it would not surprise me if the NFL, if there's some agreement that like, guys, you don't get to put out other teams' business in your cool little draft video while you make yourself look good and make the other team look like a bunch of schmucks.
It's happened a couple times now, right? Because it happened with the Vikings did it with the Eagles though. Remember?
They all do it, but so it's fine. I think it's great content, but it's sneaky. But one thing that happens,
It's the great content because you guys look cool and the other team's kind of getting played.
So one thing that happens in that video is,
how did you know it was the Vikings? Because he picks up, he goes, what's up, Rick? Or whatever.
I don't remember exactly what he said. Maybe it was because someone described that it was the Vikings, or maybe they knew. Maybe I think what it was they said the numbers. It was like they're offering like whatever 51 and 66.
It was obvious it was their pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
And well, but the part in the video that you just made me think of was the owner of the Panthers, David Tepper, sitting there, and he's like, "Tell him not to call back unless it's a one," or like he's like making like these grand pronouncements. It's like, "Tell him we're not messing around." Which again,
so the video makes him look good, right?
Yeah, it makes him look like a tough guy, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, again, this is what I would say. If I'm an owner, that'd be kind of the fun part of the job, but it's not ideal for your GM to be in that environment. I wonder if one of the challenges for Atlanta is they can't get a one for Julio. They can't. But I don't think. But Arthur Blank is going, you're telling me you can't get a first round pick for this guy who is one of the greatest players in the history of our franchise, one of the best players in the NFL?
I think best when we've done this before, I think when you factor in the longevity he's had on the team, right? He's been there for a decade. Deion was there 4 or 5 years. I mean, this guy, when you've been there that long, it's just, I think he's the best player in the history of their franchise.
So you're a new GM and you want to prove, you know, you want Arthur to be like, look at my guy wheeling and dealing. You trade him for a second round pick and that's it. I don't know that you feel like you won. But again, I don't know that they can. I would be surprised if they got a first round pick.
So I don't even think it's possible. And we were talking about this before we jumped on. I do think it's very relatable to a housing market, buyers and sellers. And it's clearly right now a buyer's market for Julio. I think a lot of teams are thinking they can get Julio. Like, can we get him for a second? And they eat $6 million.
Right.
Like that typically with Julio. And then so I used Diggs last year. I think Spielman is widely considered just a super high level GM. And it was clear, right? They had had their run-ins with Diggs over the years. It was like clearly kind of a diva. But they also kind of embraced it, and he was producing that it was just – it worked. But then it was like, yeah, they're going to pivot off of him. But it didn't get dragged out very long, and boom, he goes for a one. Now, he was cheaper and younger.
It happened before the draft.
Yeah, it's not apples to apples. But to not – if you want this to be a seller's market, how about this? For 3 months when you know June 1's the deadline – be like, yeah, we're going to fucking roll with Julio. We're going to try to win with this sweet offense. And then tomorrow, go, you know, we've reconsidered. Call us. It's open for bidding. We're going to make a trade. You got 24 hours, your best offers. To me, and listen, this is, it's hard without having all the details. I just think when they've kind of pity-pattered around that these teams are kind of circling like sharks, we're going to fleece this guy.
Well, they've had, they've had two months to really watch the landscape develop, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, we're getting one of the best players in the league. Who, $15 million? Like, whatever, we'll cut a couple guards and a tackle, and we'll just put him on for, like, a late second-round pick. You know? I think that the Atlanta Falcons, and in fairness, maybe in a couple years, if that little combo of Arthur Smith and Fontenot become a good combo, they'll be like, you know, we learned a lot from that experience. And it's hard. Like, I don't... If you and I, any job you do, if one of your first acts of business is to do something like this, it's probably pretty overwhelming, right? It's like, I don't want to look bad. Because there's a huge, there'd be an insecurity in a public type job of this is going to hang over my head forever.
Especially because you right? think, I think they think what I think, what a lot of people think, he's still a good player. So you got a second round pick for a guy that's going to go, and by the way, who's calling?
Wouldn't the move?
Russ? The Patriots, yeah. The Niners. It's like, oh God,
the Packers, the Colts.
Yeah,
wouldn't the move guy have been to tell every single person that called, like, he's on our team, like, we're gonna try to win this year, and then pivot like right now?
Yeah, but again, here we are at the end of May, beginning of June. I still don't know how much you're, you know, really getting for him, even if you just sprung it on people. But
maybe you get someone to really act in a second or third. Because it's not like they've traded him yet, so everyone's already made moves for the team.
Right.
I think one of their issues is like they don't even necessarily have enough money to sign their rookie class because they're so up against the cap. Now, a lot of teams, and it's the reason why June 1, even if this Julio situation had never existed, is a date. What sucks is there are going to be some veteran players that, like, you're going to be some rap sheet and Schefter tweets over the next week of like, so-and-so got cut, so-and-so got cut, or so-and-so is either takes a pay cut or he's gone. You kind of use this day to then get closer. There are several teams, guy, that can't afford to sign their rookie classes. But I think they tell you, well, it doesn't, we're in no rush. It's May 31st. We've got time. We understand that. The difference is it's a lot easier to like cut a starting defensive tackle that you think's replaceable and pull the trigger on trading Julio Jones. Like you said, to like, we're just going to give, okay, Seattle offers us a second, and Julio's going to look sweet there, and we might not be good, and then all of a sudden I'm potentially out of, say what you want about taking over the Falcons job. I do think Thomas Dimitroff, the one thing he just has with the owner is like, you know, he did take him to an NFC Championship game, took him to a Super Bowl. Like, you are following a GM that just, not some disaster, like a guy that drafted some elite players, a guy that took the team to like high levels with the organization. If you're just a joke for a couple years, how fast does the owner with enormous money go, is this working out? I would feel pressure if I was the guy to like try to impress. That's an underrated part about football GMing, probably, is it's probably no different in like European soccer. You see Chelsea beat Man City. Is when you're a new coach, a new GM that isn't like a Ron Rivera, right? Or, you know, a guy with like pelts on the wall that just is comfortable in himself. Of like, I got to impress this guy. Like, imagine, like, the one thing Rule has is he's so rich. But you would have to, I'm going to watch that video later today. Like, this guy's just kind of looking at me. I mean, he's one of the greatest stock investors of all time. He's worth billions of dollars. That the Fitterer, the new GM, like, that first, the draft is like, I kind of want to look like I was wheeling and dealing.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
See this, Tepper?
Tell him no.
Three threes and four fours. Call me back, Billy.
Tell him they're crazy. So I was thinking about the Niners from this perspective. June 2 is when we get to, you know, presumably this week, maybe something happens with Julio. And I've been on the record as, I would say, against trading for Julio, not because I don't think Julio is a great player, but because I think the Niners' draft capital should be used at other positions. I think they've got really good receivers that they can win with, and they've got to make sure that they're able to continue to evolve as a team over the next couple of years. But I think if I was going to play devil's advocate on that point, I would say this. The argument for Julio is stay aggressive. Not you traded a lot for Trey Lance, so you need to save your future draft capital. But what if you made the argument you traded a lot for Trey Lance, so you need to stay aggressive? That empires are built on aggressiveness, not on passivity. And that even though you can't just be blindly aggressive, you've got to go for it in the right spots, not just all spots. Wouldn't you argue that Kyle Shanahan, knowing Julio Jones as well as he knows him, you could easily make the case that's being aggressive in the right spot, not being aggressive in the wrong spot. And so I wonder if the Niners are looking at it that way. Like, we went all in on Trey. Let's keep pressing. We think we have an advantage. We were aggressive and it worked. Let's keep pressing that aggressiveness. I was thinking about it from this perspective. If you're Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch today and you just went really aggressive on Trey Lance, you traded what you traded, you did the month of evaluating everybody, you got him. Now he's in the building. You like him, right? Do you feel better or worse about the fact today that you were aggressive? I think today you're probably feeling a little emboldened. Like, we were aggressive and we think to this point, it's still a long way to go. He's got to be a good player, but it went pretty well. Like, we feel good about what we just did. Let's do it again. I could see them feeling that way. I really could.
Well, the Rams are a good example. They just keep putting their chips in the middle of the table, and it's, I don't think they get enough credit for how successful they've been. Like, and someone tweeted at me, like, probably within the last 4 or 5 days about, like, should the Packers be disappointed that over the last 30 years they only got 2 rings? Like, well, they actually went to back-to-back Super Bowls with Favre, and I Googled, like, that game. Like, it was a barn burner. You know, Elway's historic. It was tied 24-24 in the fourth quarter. I bet if you just sat down with Holmgren and Favre to this day, they'd be like, yeah, we easily could have won that game, right? Rodgers has been to 5 NFC Championship games. Like, they've had a lot of success. My point is, success, like, what the Rams have done the last 4 years is very, very successful. Tom Brady is the ultimate outlier. And maybe the Chiefs now are a team that, like, anything less than a Super Bowl berth is a disappointment. But I can't even say, like, they got to win every Super Bowl. Like, if they're going to Super Bowls, especially once you already have the one, like, part of the thing with the Bills, like, they never won the one. But if they just keep doing what they're doing, like, that's a success. The Niners, and part of being aggressive like the Rams, they always feel like we're just always all in on their team. And I think it, you know, part of it is they're going after really good players. And for the most part, with the Niners, they've done the same. And I think Seattle's a good example. They've done the same. It doesn't mean it always works. But with that mindset, I don't think Belichick gets enough credit over his 20 years. I was thinking when you were talking about the, you know, empires that are built on aggression, they had so many moments, you know, throughout the 2000s that really built the culture to, like, take it to the next level in the 2000, I guess it would be 10s, where they signed Corey Dillon. Remember, he was like this malcontent with the Bengals. Mm-hmm. And he was awesome for him. Rodney Harrison, they went and got him. And then, like, when they pivoted to the team that the middle era that actually never won a championship, they traded for Randy Moss. They signed Wes Welker. They just got really, really aggressive. He was always Revis in the 2010s, always making moves that were just, people are like, he's just really conservative. Well, I'd say if you check out his history, he might trade a Logan Mankins or a Richard Seymour or Asante Samuel when he thought, like, yeah, this, I'm not going to pay him again.
Right.
I'm not going to give him a third contract. But it wasn't ever, I'm just kicking a good player to the curb, unless Chandler Jones actually came up when I was in Arizona, because we were talking about John Bones Jones. I think they knew when they were trading him he was a really good player, just maybe they didn't feel comfortable, right, when he went in naked to the
police
precinct. I think the conversation, was he having, I had thought that he just didn't know where he was going, but someone was saying, and I think this is correct, he was freaking out.
Yeah, he was freaking out. He had like a drug overdose, right? Or what? He was having an episode and he went to the police station.
He had a bad trip. Yeah, synthetic weed or something. He went for help. Yeah. He just didn't have any clothes on.
Right.
But it turns out, like, I think the Cardinals have been, he's easily been, I'd say, their best player the last 5 years, right?
It's been fantastic.
I remember Joe Staley being like, Jesus, this guy's hard to block. I remember he had a quote after a game, and you just watch him. He's a dominant, dominant player. But, yeah, if you tell me they traded a two this upcoming year and, like, a future three, just did something really aggressive, just what the Rams would do, no one's going to complain. No. Not a fucking soul.
No. On YouTube, KC says, the biggest benefit at this point of trading for Julio is to keep him away from Seattle, LA, or Arizona. Not having a first or second next year would hurt, but you still got to re-sign Warner, too. So as it relates to the division, Florio wrote that, according to a source with knowledge of the dynamics, air quotes, the Rams are out. Which, to me, when I read that, I think, well, okay, the Falcons are saying they want a first, and the Rams don't have a first until 2024.
Because you agree the Rams would gladly give next year's two for him. You wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah. Be like, yeah, we like Tutu Atwell and the $3 million or whatever we're paying DeSean Jackson on game bonuses, but yes. And then I guess Diana Russini on Sunday said that the Seahawks have talked about Julio and that Russell has talked to Julio. Now, again, like that, you know, I think some of what's happening here is the Falcons are trying to create a market, create a little urgency. I still think they'd be hard-pressed to get a one, but I don't buy
that
the Rams.
That could be a Pete leak. Like, you know, Russell said he talked to him. We're happy about it. You can play general manager,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, play game.
Yeah, Russ had a great idea. None of us had thought of it.
Here's the thing, though. When I say Julio, and I was on a text chain with a couple guys in the NFL, and they're like, where do you think? And I'm like, well, I would never, ever discount the Rams or Seattle. Because this is Pete's alley, right?
Yeah.
Those two teams, that mindset, they have. And that's where the Niners are still trying to figure out their lot in land. Like, the Rams established it. I'd say Pete, historically, they would have no problem trading like a two and a four or whatever for Julio. Again, money. People are like, middle off the cap. That fucking does not matter. I cut four guys tomorrow. There are several veteran guys that, coming off a long holiday weekend, probably didn't sleep that well because their agent's like, just be prepared. Like, am I good? I don't know. Maybe the agent's lying, like, you're good. He's like, I don't know. The guys get cut like that.
Well, it's one of the.
And if you tell me that they got Lockett, Julio, and DK, that is pretty dominant. To me, because Russell, I know how Russell looks with Seattle, is almost even scarier than the Rams. And we'd all agree the Rams would be scary with them. But those guys, I mean, those two humongous dudes and a little guy who's honestly, he's like the most underrated player in the NFL that no one talks about, right? Tyler Lockett. All he does is score touchdowns.
I wasn't underrated on the guy hitting the DraftKings. Hey, Habe DraftKings team last year.
If Seattle's at the 5-yard line, they're going to do this play action crosser and Lockett's going to be wide open in the corner. Can anyone cover that play? I've seen him do it 15 times.
It's either that or the front pylon to, what's the guy's name? Not Hokit. Hollister. Jacob Hollister's going to catch one, you know, one-on-one. He'll have like 8 feet past the linebacker on the weak side of the play.
One catch to his helmet, looked like David Tyree.
The problem for the Falcons, John, is they're trying to drum up all this action, is like, two of the most aggressive teams in the league, the Rams and the Seahawks, and then the Niners, who I'm not calling them one of the most aggressive teams in the league, but Kyle, who would love Julio, none of these teams have first-round picks. The Seahawks don't. And so if you're Atlanta, you don't want to trade them for a 2023 first or a 2024 first. Like, you can't do that. I think it kind of hurts their negotiating power.
I do feel confident saying this. If the Niners and Rams both had a one next year, I don't think the Niners would do that deal. I do think the Rams would.
And, I could not first, yeah.
I would not criticize the Niners for not giving their first for a 30 guy who's going to be 33. But the Rams, without hesitation, would give the first. Even Seattle, I could see them being on the fence. Like, our two best players, beside Russell, are two wide receivers. The Rams just do not care at all.
No.
And, I mean, when you do read, I mean, they spent $6 billion on the stadium. $6 billion.
Remember the price kept going up because there was like all this torrential, there was like a really bad rain and it delayed the stadium build and all this stuff. And, you know, Spanos had to make some hard decisions, John.
Do you think, how long do you think, you know, when they do like, if you pay down the minimum payment, you'll have it paid off by X number of years, $1 a year in rent. When does that pay off the $6 billion? Do the math. I think it's a long time.
It'll be Spanos, the 800th, will be the owner of the team by then. Whatever yeah, that
thanks,
guy's
Dean.
Name is.
Appreciate you chipping in. Honestly, it's a genius move by Stan because you're like, there is no amount I could really charge him. The more I charge him, the bigger pain in the ass he is with me. So it's like, just give me a dollar and just
charge him a dollar. I get to do everything else that I want and
stay away from me.
Yeah. It's kind of almost, it's kind of insulting to the guy. It's kind of insulting to the Chargers when you charge them a dollar. You know?
Very insulting.
Because then it's like, you guys are just squatters.
Yeah. We're so rich that the games that when we're alternating the games when we're on the road, your payment to us, there's not an amount you could give us that would matter to me. So just give me a dollar so I never, ever have to answer your phone calls. That relationship has to be a little weird.
Very weird. Very weird. Like, I would imagine there are some doors that are locked on Charger game days that no one's allowed to
open. 1,000%.
Like, all right, I'm here for the owner's suite. Well, actually, Stan's suite is locked. You guys get this suite over here. It's on the 35 actually, in the nosebleeds.
Actually, you just get some seats.
Here's a broom closet. Okay. Before we go any further, John, let's tell the people about geology.com/ham. Geology.com/ham. Right now, you get 40% off any trial set. 40% off any trial set. And you can pre-order the SPF 30 unisex face sunscreen right now. Pre-order, you save 20% on that. It'll begin shipping end of, I think it might start shipping this week. Right now, geology.com/ham.
Here's the thing. The older you get, sunscreen matters. I actually had that conversation this weekend because, you know, my parents' generation, older generation, sunscreen, I don't remember becoming a really big deal till like probably we were in like high school. Like I never wore sunscreen as a kid going to swimming pools and hanging out with friends. There is not a swimming pool I go to now. Not that I go to many swimming pools, but like if I'm there with buddies with younger kids, like sunscreen is not getting applied. It's getting poured all over.
How about just
matter.
Four
it's
drunk guys on a golf course are constantly applying sunscreen?
Oh my God. I mean, this weekend I saw several double sprays, you know? So it's life-changing, game-changing, and it's very healthy for you. The other thing, obviously, geology, face washes, other lotions, creams. Can't recommend enough. Geology.com/ham.
Yeah, you just take a quick quiz. Whatever your issue is, you got oily skin, you got dry skin, you got bags under the eyes. Whatever it is, your problem, maybe some wrinkles around the eyes. They got something for everybody. Every day, John, I'm using the Everyday Face Wash, and I'm using the Vital Morning Face Cream. I think it's got a little sunscreen in it, too, just kind of after I shave every day. It's great. So geology.com/ham, 40% off any trial set. Go check that out. Podcast
Do it.
Also brought to you by Gabby.com/ham. Gabby.com/ham. When it comes to car and home insurance, we all deserve better. Put your policy to the test. Get a better insurance. That's what Gabby stands for. G-A-B-I. Get a better insurance at Gabby.com/ham. It's totally free to check. Better policy for you than what you currently have.
Yep. Use your current insurance information to get started, and in just minutes, you'll be able to see quotes for the exact same coverage you currently have. It's free to use. They truly compare the rates. You and I did it, I think, in 2020.
Did it in October.
When we typed in our stuff. Yeah, and it is amazing. It gives you the breakdown because you just, you know, when you're novices at it, and younger people, and I know we're lucky, our demo's pretty young, you type in, you don't even know. You're like, is this the going rate? Is this how much I have to pay? That's where Gabby comes in. They factor in all the insurance companies. They get you the right price. Customers have – guy, here's the key. They save $900. Gabby customers save $961 per year on average. $961. You know what that is? That's net income, right? So when you factor in taxes and stuff, that's your actual money. That's what you're paying. And they'll never sell your info. Think how annoying that is. I don't know how many phone calls you're getting from those 888 numbers. They're driving me nuts, but that's Gabby ain't doing that to you.
Not a joke. I've gotten two since we did this show. So that's important.
Yeah.
You get multiple offers from top insurers. You can pick the best deal. You save time. It quickly matches your current coverage with almost no manual, little to no manual entry. And you get peace of mind. You rest easy knowing you've explored your options and you have the best price. It might be that you currently have the best price. It'll tell you that. It'll tell you that. So here's what you do. Put your policy to the test like we did. Get a better insurance with Gabby, G-A-B-I. Totally free to check. No obligation. Gabby.com/ham. G-A-B-I.com/ham. Gabby.com/ham. So McVay's about to come out swinging. That's the other part of this. With or without Julio, I think one thing, the Niners, the NFC West, the Cardinals, the Seahawks, everybody just has to be ready. When you go back and look last year, it's crazy. The Rams, John, were 22nd in the league in points last year. 22nd. And I was listening to, a couple weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast. I don't remember, one of the Rams writers was on and said that one of the things last year, McVay was just frustrated because he couldn't really do some of the basic stuff he wanted to do offensively because of the limitations they had with Goff. And that was Stafford. He's going to be ready to start throwing the ball down the field a lot more. Then he goes and signs Deshaun. Then he drafts the very fast Tutu Atwell. McVay is, I know you told me you listened to his Flying Coach podcast the other day. I haven't listened yet. But I think McVay's treating this year like Sean McVay's comeback story. Even though we don't really think of him as he was been gone, I would think that he looks at himself as, I did not get to do what I do in the NFL. So I'm fully prepared for the Rams to make a very concerted effort to be a top, 15-10 offense this year.
Yeah, to me, there's a video that he does have a lot of Gruden's mannerisms. I'd say the main difference is he's very successful, and John right now is just not. It's not like a Raider shot. It's just a fact. But the one thing different, even John in his heyday of like the older Raider fans I have in my life, they're like, I'm not shocked when you watch his team, and I think he frustrates some people with his conservative nature. He's like, Gruden's a conservative guy. And in fairness to John, the football he grew up in, right, played college football when like the 80s, his football mindset gets developed in the 90s and the late 80s. The game was very conservative. We've often talked about Andy Reid. Why he was such an outlier, all you got to do is like read the Steve Young book. For those of us that are younger, that grew up, didn't see those mid-80 powerhouse BYU teams, they were like on steroids Mike Leach squad. I mean, they were bombs away. So the BYU crew was used to throwing the ball. The entire sport of football, guy, was not. Even the West Coast offense with Bill Walsh, which was throwing heavy, it was predicated on throwing slant routes and wheel routes to the running back. Right. It was not Jerry Rice. I mean, he did, just because he was a great player. They were not running constant go routes like they did with Randy Moss and Tom Brady. That's not the offense.
Well, think about what is what is the highlight from the 49ers blowout of the Chargers in the Super Bowl?
Wasn't it a slant route that he took to the
Jerry
house?
Jerry just goes.
And wasn't it he was known for? He's like, he would just catch that 5-yard out route. He'd take it to the end zone, 50 more yards. And that was kind of his thing. He was like Steph Curry. He never got tired. But to me, when I think Sean McVay, who, like LaFleur, for example, I know they threw a lot of touchdowns this year, but they clearly, he's very Kyle-y. They want to run the ball. They re-signed Aaron Jones. Rodgers' first year, when I think they thought he was trending the wrong way, I remember when the Niners played him the first time on that Sunday night game, the two running backs had already combined for 20 touchdowns. Like, they are going to be, like Kyle, very run-heavy and pass off the run. I do feel like McVay would have no problem if, like, Stafford's comfortable, like, going 5-wide shotgun and just fucking let it rip.
When you go back and look, so...
And Packers do that a little bit with Rodgers, but it feels like Rodgers going, yeah, I'm throwing
those
back.
Those are plays that have been called in the huddle. When you go back and look at McVay, last year they were 22nd in points, the Rams. It's the worst he's ever been ranked in points since his first year as an offensive coordinator in Washington in 2014. In 2017 and 2018, he had the number one ranked offense by points. He led the league in points in 2017. He was second in the league in points in 2018. In those years, he was a top rushing offense too. Okay, he was ninth in attempts the year he led the league in points, and he was eighth in attempts the year they were second in points. Now, part of that is you've got a lead.
You're a lead. You're running the ball in the fourth quarter.
But I don't think there's any.
I mean, Todd was pretty damn good, too, right? I mean, his best player was probably Gurley that year.
Todd was very good. There's no way he wants to be 24th in attempts, right? That's what they were. They were 24th in passing attempts the year they led the league in offense. And I don't have the breakdown here of like yards per attempt ranking, but I think in his mind, fifth year in the league as a head coach now, he's been waiting 5 years for Matthew Stafford or somebody like Matthew Stafford, or been waiting 4 years for this.
Well, and maybe I wonder if he'd tell you if you were around him, like they thought that Jared could just maybe not obviously be Matt Stafford, but could just keep getting better, and he got capped, right? They just found out he had a ceiling because. They did sign him that massive extension. No way they did it without Sean signing off. And Jared was a lot better, I thought, in 17 and 18 than he was. And I mean, it's not even debatable. Last year, he was clearly just falling apart. Maybe lost his confidence or whatever. I can't recommend the flying coach. I texted Traeger. I'm like, that was really good. And I mean, part of it, I give Traeger credit. McVay talks a lot. And he's a star. And I was thinking about this. This morning, because we've been talking about the Rams and talking about this for a while, we just hadn't had time. Is McVay part of usually football rivalries? Like, God, I hate Belichick. Drives me nuts. Or, you know, I can't stand Sean Payton. Like, there are, you know, Mike Zimmer, that crusty old asshole. Forever, it was like Parcells and Holmgren, all these guys like button heads.
They're villains.
You don't meet that many. Yeah, you don't meet. Like, McVay's not only not a villain, he is extremely likable. And he is a massive star. And I think what makes it unique is sometimes when you get these huge personalities as a coach, you're like, you know, a little hollow, not that substancey. It's not like that with Sean. Like, he's clearly a really good coach.
Well, he's,
and that's what I think, why so many people like respect him. It's like, he's good at his job. It's not just, he's not just this outspoken, talks a lot podcaster. Because guy, if he had a podcast, I linked you in an Instagram, we'd be in trouble.
Wait, when did you, today?
No, probably like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago. That if he wanted to do like an NFC West podcast, I mean, he would just get a lot of listens. You know, I mean,
if McVay started making Niner videos?
He's so good that, not that we didn't know this, he's been, talked about for a long time. If he quit coaching tomorrow, Lewis Riddick and all those guys would be fired by yesterday, and Sean McVay would be the Monday. Like, he would not remember. Jay Cutler wanted to get into it. They like had to do some things with Kevin Burkhardt, like with other guys, and they had to do some demo tapes. No demo tapes. He's immediately like John Gruden, and he's calling Monday Night Football. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think those guys are fired from TV. They're just off Monday Night Football.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean their Monday Night run is over.
Right. Yeah. He
like Sean McVay's like, I've had a mental breakdown. I can't coach anymore. I just want to do TV. Take a deep breath. He would be doing Monday Night Football. And it would be a really big deal, and he would be awesome.
I think part of when you're talking about likability, part of it is you think about sort of some of the biggest figures in the sport. Like you mentioned, Bill is obviously number one. Bill doesn't share. Bill's not transparent. Bill doesn't, you know, the way you see Bill's genius is by watching his football team. McVay is more than happy to explain himself, which is not a common trait. For people in his position, football coaches in general are not a very open breed. They're always worried that somebody else is gaining an advantage of them by things they say. And they don't want to be bothered with trying to explain stuff to the rest of the people who don't really understand what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, I do think they are with their own like coaching clinics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, high school, I'm talking college, specifically about like media availability, that type of thing, right? Yeah, they love talking to each other. Exactly. They love talking. I'm sure Bill loves talking to other coaches. Bill would rather talk to a high school lacrosse coach, right?
Yeah, I think something went viral last year. Bill like spoke at the Zoom high school coaching conference. And I think whenever he does stuff like that, he blows people away. Like, he has it in him. The difference is McVay, and I think this is kind of a younger generation thing. There's really kind of less to hide. Like, what am I hiding? You know, obviously I'm not going to tell you like the special play we have called against the look. Now, you're right. It's a nature of football. It's a unique sport where in basketball, like, yeah, we're fucking throwing the ball to LeBron here. In football, you don't ever know the plays. Like, it's by far the most tactical game.
Right.
Right. Because even in baseball, if I do some crazy shift, I can see where you're shifting when I'm up at bat, right? I know where you're sitting. In football, it's always like, well, he hit the look. He hit him with the cover two, but then they shifted to a zero blitz with a defensive end dropping into the flat and the other guy, the rover rotating. It's like, what the hell are they even talking about? But that's part of, and then they hit him with the look that they gave in 2017, but they brought the dude in the fly motion.
Yeah.
And
but Kuechly recognized it just because he's got a fast CPU in his brain.
Yeah, and he jumped it, but he jumped a little too early, and he tipped the ball. You know,
and it was a three. Yeah, it was a lot. And it was a 3-yard gain. You know,
yeah. Now it's 2nd and 7.
Oh my God! All that for that? Yeah, yeah. No, it's well, and that might be part of his personality. It might be harder for him to be that guy than it is to just be himself. So he just acts like himself.
And I have always thought the key, in my experiences around football coaches, but the more and more we've done just around other people in life. If you are true to yourself, and in different businesses it can make people uncomfortable, you're more likely to have success than trying to be someone you're not. So I think most of the case, right, with the what make the flying coach thing cool is like it all comes back to Mike Shanahan. And one thing Robert Saleh said was like they asked him, like, have you been bugged yet in New York? He's like, well, you know, I have a mask on when I go in place so people don't recognize you. And they all start giving him, like, Robbie, you're pretty recognizable. You're a bald, darker guy. Like, they know who you are. But his point was like, and then McVay talked about in LaFleur too, is working for Mike, there was just kind of a standard set how to treat random fans and, like, the way to – and you just realize all these guys kind of came up. And they're all pretty – it was one of those that we'll look back, like the Walsh, Seifert, just that whole tree. And it really started with Bill Walsh, change all these people's lives forever.
Right.
Change them all forever. Even, like, Andy Reid and John Gruden, they're all – directly connected to Walsh, even though they never quote unquote coached for him because it was Holmgren or it's just that.
You feel like Mike Doug Shanahan Peterson is this, kind of a several, right? He played for those
big
guys.
Time. He played for Mike Holmgren. These guys are all connected. We talk about Kyle a lot. It's really Mike, right? Because Kyle was not the head coach. Mike had to okay hiring like just all these guys. Now it turns out they've all financially changed a lot of lives, right?
Yep.
And he's a key one that like. And he connected to Gruden, two Grudens and a Shanahan. This guy, I don't think I've ever been more dead wrong on a call is when McVay. I like, yeah, you know, because when he got hired, I think he was 31 and I was 32. I'm like, this is going to be impossible. Like no chance this is going to work. And obviously you don't know anything about him, right? Besides just the younger guy. I guess you'd heard his name. Because he was the youngest coordinator ever, I think, in NFL history when Jay started letting him call plays, right, at probably like 27 or 28. But it hasn't just worked. Like, he's lived up to it. I think it gets back to, like, he really is good. You know, and back to the Niners. Like, the Niners have been kicking his ass for 2 straight years. Like, when you're two team like, in a division, if you lose 4 straight games to a team and you're not, like, a Jag, like a bottom feeder, if you're a good team, like, that's pretty – that'll rattle you a little bit because it's one thing to lose a game, but you get beat twice by a team in a year. It's like, God, can we not? What the fuck's going on here?
He'll be out for blood this year, John, and it's not because he's failed.
Well, that was another part of the deal. He's like, you know, Robert, not losing sleep seeing you gone because he's really pummeled him.
Well, yeah, and I think in McVay's mind, it's not because I'm not good enough and you're superior to me. My quarterback could not beat you, period. My quarterback couldn't beat you.
What he really wants to say, like, hey, guys, have you ever seen a number one overall pick consistently skip out routes? Because that's what my guy was doing. Skipping the ball, yeah. 15-yard out route? No, like a 3-yard speed out. He skips it. If we can't run just one of the most basic plays in football, how are we going to do anything?
He has to feel pretty.
Thank God for Aaron Donald.
He has to feel. I know.
The skipping the balls with Jared Goff. It happened to the Niners, but if you were just like on your couch, like watching random like Rams, Jets, you're like, God, what? This is kind of crazy. Because then he would make a normal throw. He probably consistently, if you just like were a scout, he probably had 20, 30 plus throws that were like practice squad level embarrassing, it felt like last year. Because I'd notice it every game. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
He has to feel pretty, I don't know if lucky's the word, they made it happen, but. You just don't normally transition to quarterbacks in the NFL the way that he just did.
The one thing, though, and you could probably make this argument with any quarterback that you pay a lot, that you draft high, and then becomes because if I said, well, if Stafford gets hurt, well, yeah, if Roger gets hurt, if Russell gets hurt, if, you know, Brady gets hurt, like, that's just part of the game. They did pay a lot.
Ton.
You know?
Ton.
So if he but they were paying a lot for the other guy, too.
It's like they were, I mean, it was already money that was spoke of. I know, but it's, they probably looked at it like, this isn't costing us nothing. Like, it's costing us wins, and it's costing us money. So what are we doing here?
Million.
We've hit our ceiling. Anyway.
All right. You think the Lions deep down just think, yeah, we're just basically paying like a $30 million tax and not be that good.
Yeah.
But get extra picks.
Yeah. They just, they bought picks, which I support. I actually think it's great.
Yeah. If you're going to bottom out, you could argue the Lions of all the jobs, given that by far had the easiest landing spot, right? Just the bar couldn't be any lower. Patricia was such an embarrassment. This is back to the Belichick thing you were talking about, doesn't really share. One thing was clear, he doesn't share with his people in his building, right? So he has these guys that go out on their own, and they just, because one thing, yeah. I remember reading an article like last year, the Crafts were like, you need to, he tried to be more inclusive, which when I read that, like, you can't, you telling me a 67-year-old Belichick is like, I'm just going to be more inclusive now. Like, that's just not his, that's not who
clearly
he is.
Mike Shanahan was that type of guy, right? Because you don't, all these guys don't go off and have success if you weren't sharing with them and giving them responsibility and that kind of thing.
I think Shanahan and Andy, it probably comes natural to them, right? Because you can't, I don't think you can fake that. Some guys are just bunker mentality. Like, I don't think Parcells was a huge sharer,
yeah,
when he was the head coach. And part of it is he's just, he was more the true general. Like, also, and this is no shot at these guys, they're highly successful coaches. But Tomlin and Harbaugh, I do think it's harder to just share like pure leadership as it is like scouting ideas, coaching scheme ideas. Like, that's pretty easy to share. It's harder to be like, you know, I had this feeling we had to, I just give them the day off and go to the water slides. You know, shit that like during a training camp 5 years ago that worked or whatever.
We'll see you Wednesday.
Yeah. Like, that to me is a little, you either got that or you don't. But like, if Shanahan's, hey, this running scheme against this look has worked in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. It will always work. So when you're in a pinch, go to this play. If you're ever in a short yardage, that's type of stuff that is Belichick always sharing that stuff. It does feel him and Josh, their relationship is as strong as any assistant he's ever been around, right? Last couple of years, I felt like they've gone and they're traveling together on the pro days and kind of joined at the hip.
Yeah.
But you could also argue, like, okay, if Bill's interested in drafting a quarterback, it would be malpractice to not bring his offensive coordinator with him, right?
You would think that, yes.
It's pretty basic. I mean, should he get credit for that?
I think it's in Bill's interest just for quote-unquote legacy, for things to be, for him to set up the pit. Whatever Bill retires, for him to set up Josh to continue to succeed, because Bill will get continued credit for that, particularly if he found the quarterback. If Mac Jones is the quarterback for the next 10 years, Bill will start getting some of that credit.
Yeah.
By the way, on the YouTube stream, Pat asks, who's delivering pizza? I mean, you know what we always say. Order the ham pot at Pink Onion Pizza.
Oh, yeah. Was that like, did something come up about pizza?
I don't know. I think he just wants to know where to get some pizza. He knows that we like pizza.
Yeah.
Our guy Matt. Who doesn't? Go see our guy Matt. Oakhurst, you've played out there, right? Country Club? That's Matt belongs, yeah, out there. He keeps inviting us out there. We haven't been able to go. But we appreciate his pizza and his pasta and his dessert items.
So he works in the city and lives out in the East Bay?
He lives in the East Bay, but his restaurant is in San Francisco, Pink Onion Pizza.
Gotcha. And you got any pizza lately?
I have not had pizza lately. No. I mean, you know, lately, like within the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
I need to get some pink onion.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
Among right other now, things. Actually. All right. Well, we'll be back this week. Don't forget mailbag. Wednesday, we'll see. We'll let you know what time we're doing, that we might have something that we're doing in the morning. We'll see. But either way, another pod coming. Get your mailbag stuff in for the weekend mailbag and all that. Anything else to report?
Yeah, keep them coming. You know, have a good week.
Share it with your
Summer's
friends.
Summer's here. He's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell your people.
Tell your
Forward
people.
Forward podcasts and videos. I mean, do what you guys do.
Yeah. Any chance you get, just say, Haberman and Middlecoff, those are my guys. When you're talking sports, just find a way to work us in.
Yeah, come on, people.
Yeah. All right. Later, everybody. Thanks for hanging with us.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.